All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Sri Prabhupada and Guru Vishwadaya Vishwastadya. Srimati Bhakti Ranta Swami Nitinamaya Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauranga Pajami Narasasa Sangani Vasachaya Sajama. Monday Hum Sri Guru Sri Utah Padakam Hum Sri Guru Vajra Vajra Sri Guru Hum Sahaja Hum Sahaja Sadvaitam Samjutam Prijana Saita Krishna Janadeva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sadhana Lavita Shri Shakam Vitamscha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Chapter 36, August 29, 2009, Honolulu. We're doing Bhagavad Gita chapters 7 through 12. So yesterday we did chapters 1 through 3. We talked about how Arjuna was in a war, didn't want to kill his relatives. He had, what was his arguments?
Didn't want to commit sin.
How can he enjoy?
Sinful.
Compassion.
Unwanted population. Now, these were his arguments. Krishna then answered all of these, talked about how we're not the body, talked about how if we want to really be happy, we should perform our duty and we should act as sacrifices. A real emphasis in the first six chapters on sacrifice. And then Krishna says a sacrifice should be done in knowledge. Then he gives that knowledge, and first he gives his credentials. Right? Because his credentials, just like you introduce a speaker. So he introduces himself. He kind of prods Arjuna to ask a question so he can introduce himself. Talks about the different kinds of sacrifice. Says that he responds accordingly. And that he even engages people in varnashram if they're not able to immediately surrender. Then he talks about doing sacrifice in knowledge. And how one doing sacrifice in knowledge comes to transcendental knowledge, where he sees all living entities equal. And where does such a person get their pleasure from?
Within.
From within. By their relationship with Krishna, and not from the?
Senses.
Not from the senses, and not from the fruits of action. Not looking for happiness in the fruits of action. And such a people sees that they can't get their happiness from the fruits because they're not the what of the fruits?
The doer.
They're not the controller. The controller of material nature in Krishna, and therefore such a person finds peace because they know that Krishna is the supreme controller, the supreme
friend.
Enjoyer, and the supreme friend. But Arjuna was still interested in saying, let me just give up all work, I'm very advanced in yoga. So Krishna says, yes, that's true. The beginner in yoga works without fruit of desire, and the advanced person in yoga can give up all activities. And what should such a person do?
Go off to the forest.
And give up
sex
and defending and regulate the others and just do what?
Meditate
and do what with the mind?
Subdue it.
Just completely subdue the mind, fix it on one place. And Arjuna says,
impossible.
I can't do that. What if I try it and fail? What happens to someone who fails? And then Krishna says,
No loss.
If you take up any kind of yoga, there's no loss. And then he says, the best yogi is one who's always
engaged fully
in my service and always thinking of me. So this is how Krishna ended. He was saying, the best kind of yoga is always to think about me. Yoginam api sarvesham makatan antar atmana shradavam bhajateyo mamsha salma yukta tamomataha. So now if you're going to always think about Krishna, you have to know what to think about. Think about me. So that may be easy for Arjuna, who's there looking at Krishna, but for us here reading the Bhagavad Gita 5,000 years later, what do we do? How do we think about Krishna? And that woman last night, Jay, she was asking that question. How do I think about Krishna? And we'll find that particularly in this middle six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is really telling us how to think of him. And we know that Prabhupada talks about how Bhagavad Gita is the beginning scripture. Then more advanced is Srimad Bhagavatam. And more advanced is Chaitanya Charitamrita. So in Srimad Bhagavatam, you get far more detailed examples of how to think of Krishna, both in the creation of the world, like the beginning canto, especially second canto, third canto, how does Krishna create the world? Here in these six chapters, he's going to give, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything comes from me. I'm the original father. I'm the original grandfather. But he's not giving detailed descriptions. That's in the Bhagavatam. And then the Bhagavatam go on to read about Krishna's incarnations, which again, here there was just a little hint in the fourth chapter. Yada yada hi dharmasya paritranaya sadhanam. But there's no details. Bhagavad Gita, Krishna isn't saying, I'm Nisinga, I'm Varaha, I'm Korma. And so that's all in the Bhagavatam, all of those different stories. And of course, the Bhagavatam also has the descriptions of Vrindavan Leela. But then Chaitanya Charitamrita is going into more depth of Vrindavan Leela. Chaitanya Charitamrita also establishes that Krishna is God, but is really going into depth into it, because that's, as we were saying in Radhastami, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's purpose, to speak about Vrindavan Leela. But this is the beginning. And this beginning is not unimportant. It's not unimportant. Obviously, for us, taking up Krishna consciousness from material life, certainly we should be thinking about Krishna's Vrindavan Leela, but we should also be thinking about how Krishna describes himself in these chapters. And there are four chapters in which Krishna describes how he can be understood in the world, and three of them are in this middle section, 7, 9, 10, and 15. How we can think of Krishna in the course of our daily life. This is one of the biggest questions I get asked. I've isolated about five questions that I get asked all over the world, over and over and over again, by people in all cultures, all ages, all levels of spiritual life. And one of them is, how can I think of Krishna in the course of my daily life?
I answered that last night.
Yes. So, but I gave a little window last night into what we're... Like, that was like a little preview, you know, like a movie trailer. So then, now we're going to look at the details, how we can think of Krishna in our daily life. That's really what's in these middle six chapters. How anybody, because remember, we end in the sixth chapter where Krishna's saying, okay, Arjuna, you want to give up your work? You don't want to do anything? You just want to be a yogi? Do this. And Arjuna says, whoa, I can't do that. Chanchala himana Krishna. I'm not going to be able to do that. So now Krishna's giving practical instructions for anybody. How can you be a yogi in daily life? Whether you're a householder, whether you're a renunciate, whether you're a warrior on the battlefield. I mean, I don't think any of us have any job that's as engaging as a warrior on the battlefield. But how can you do that? So the seventh chapter, Krishna is going to describe how he's the essence of everything. Then he's also going to talk about how he's the source of everything. He says, who surrenders to him, who doesn't surrender to him, talks a little bit about the fault of demigod worship, and says that one can remember him even at the time of death. Then there's a little detour in the eighth chapter, because Arjuna asks some questions. He asks Krishna to define some terms, and then he says, and how can people know you at the time of death? So Krishna quickly defines those terms, and then he talks a lot about the time of death. The eighth chapter is really about what to do at death. And Krishna is describing the destination of the spiritual world, and he talks a little bit about the material world. Then the ninth chapter is almost a repeat of the seventh chapter, very much like the way the fifth chapter is very much a repeat of the third chapter, but on a higher level. So Krishna in the ninth chapter again describes how he's the essence of everything, except in the ninth chapter he's giving a few more details. And again he talks about people who surrender to him and people who don't. People who don't, who worship the demigods or worship the Brahman effulgence. And he ends the ninth chapter by glorifying the ease of devotional service, how simple and how easy it is. And he ends the ninth chapter with one of the most important verses in the Bhagavad Gita, one of those few verses that are repeated twice in the Bhagavad Gita. Then in the tenth chapter, Arjuna asks to see, he asks to hear about more details of how Krishna is in the world. So the seventh chapter, Krishna explains in a general way on the essence of everything. Remember, there's a little detour in the eighth chapter to answer Arjuna's questions. Ninth chapter, Krishna's giving more details about how he's the essence. Then tenth chapter, Arjuna's asking for really specific details. So there Krishna starts naming specific things in the world that represents him. And in the tenth chapter, we find the four nutshell verses of the Bhagavad Gita. How Krishna's the source of everything, how people worship him, and how Krishna reciprocates with them. So basically, Bhagavan, Bhakta, and Bhakti. who's God, who's the devotee, and what's their relationship. And then in the 11th chapter, Arjuna says, all right, you told me about all this. Now I want to see it. I've heard about it. Now I want to see it. Give me the visual. Just like for years, I never used any audio or visual things in my classes. And Rompad Swami, once at the Festival of Inspiration, I was giving a lecture about Maharaj Ambarish, and he used some very simple visuals. It took about 10 minutes to set up, and he was lecturing all of us about how we should use visuals in our teaching, after which I started putting together many visual presentations. So the Supreme Teacher, Krishna, tells us that audio-visual presentations are really helpful to learning. And he does this in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where, boy, he really gives Arjuna an audio-visual presentation that you're not going to forget. So he shows Arjuna two aspects of the universal form, one a benign aspect and one a ghastly aspect. And then there's a last verse in the chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which Prabhupada says is the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. So in the 10th chapter, you have the four nutshell verses. At the end of the 11th chapter, you have the essence of Bhagavad Gita. Then Arjuna asks, after seeing this display of Krishna as the universe, which is somewhat impersonal, Arjuna, and then seeing again Krishna's personal form, Arjuna says to Krishna, what's better, the personal or the impersonal? And Krishna says, the personal, but the impersonalist will also make it after a long time. And then Krishna gives some of the most important instructions anywhere in the Shastra. This is the different levels of performing devotional service. This is the best thing. If you can't do this, do this. 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 And Arvinda Srikupu often says that the three top levels make up the majority of the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And those verses are very important, not only to apply to our own lives, but also to help others. And then Krishna ends the 12th chapter with what I find one of the most humbling parts of the Shastra, where Krishna is describing the qualities of his devotees. And what are the symptoms? And this is also a repeated theme. You find Arjuna asks, we didn't mention this yesterday, but Arjuna asks in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, what are the symptoms of a self-realized soul? How does he speak? What is his language? How does he sit? How does he walk? And that Krishna answered there. He gives that again in the 12th chapter, and then he'll give it again later on in the 14th chapter. So those parts of Bhagavad Gita are also very important, both for us to assess our own advancement. You know, we can read those and say, how am I doing in Krishna consciousness? Rather than, okay, I'm doing well because I've been a devotee so many years, or I'm doing well because I have a certain title or something like that. But that's the real assessment criteria, as we say in education. You read those lists and you can say, how am I doing? And also those lists help us to ascertain who's at what level of advancement, which is something we're supposed to do, according to Rupa Goswami, in order to determine our association. Okay, that's an overview. Now we'll go back. The first verse of chapter 7 is, according to Dravida Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada's most often quoted verse of any shastra. And Prabhupada gave, I spoke about this verse actually yesterday at the end of the class, when I was saying that Prabhupada gave a wonderful class in Sanat India, where he said that all of us already have a shakti, all of us already have attachment. We already know what attachment is. We already have it. It's just not to Krishna personally. And that class was based on this verse, 7.1. Maya ashakta mana partha. Maya ashakta. Become attached to me. Mana partha. Win your mind. Have your mind attached to me. Your mind attached to me. With mind attached to me. And it says in the verse, with mind attached to me. Now hear, O son of Pritha, how by practicing yoga in full consciousness of me, we have mad ashrayaha, and my ashakta manapata. With mind attached to me, you can know me in full, free from doubt. Prabhupada often quotes this verse as far as touch to me, please hear, but also in reference to that one should become attached to Krishna. Hi, now what kind of things does Krishna explain in the 7th chapter that he is? He talks about earth, water, fire, air, and ether, how the living entities is superior to that. And this is where he says, I'm the taste of water, the light of the sun and the moon, syllable om in the Vedic mantras, sound in ether, ability in man, fragrance of the earth, heat in fire, the life of all that lives, the penances of ascetics. Original seed of all existences, intelligence of the intelligent, prowess of all powerful men, strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. Sex life which is not contrary to religious principles. All states of being are manifest by my energy. So this description is something that we can use to become attached to Krishna. All of us are attached to our abilities, right? Do we have some attachment to our abilities? I mean, if you, a few months ago, I stubbed my toe really badly, and I could hardly walk. I could hardly walk across the room for a couple days. So we're attached to our ability to walk. Anybody want to lose their ability to walk? We're attached to our ability to eat. So many things. We're attached to our intelligence, right? But all those things are actually Krishna. They're Krishna. I have some attachment to light. Nobody wants to work in the dark. Right? What other things did he say? It was the penances of all ascetics. If we want to know how do we get the strength to do our austerities, that's Krishna. He is our strength. So all these things we're attached to, they're all actually Krishna. And the point is to see them as Krishna. As again, as we were saying yesterday, it's just probably just a small switch. Instead of thinking, it's my ability, I'm such a good whatever. I'm so good at playing the mridanga. I'm so good at making rice. I'm so good at cleaning the floor. I'm so good at organizing things. I'm so good at making garlands, whatever it may be. That ability that we're like proud of, that's Krishna. How wonderful Krishna is. Whenever we're doing anything, my ability to sit here, that's Krishna. Krishna says he's our very life. He's our life essence. Right? And you can say, well, then why doesn't everybody see that? And Krishna says, well, they're under the nose of nature. Therefore, they don't understand his glories. And under the nose of nature means one doesn't want to understand. One is desiring instead to think, it's my ability. It's my intelligence. It's my this. It's my that. I'm the one arranging all these things. And Krishna says there are people who do see him. And there are four types of people who see him. Right? Those who want material opulence, they come to Krishna to see him. Those who want to avoid distress. Those who are curious. And those who are in knowledge. But even those who are in knowledge, bhavunam janmanam mente ganamamam prapatyante, they take many, 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 many births. And that's referring to people who are like Sanat Kumar. Sometimes the devotees say, yes, yes, I came to Krishna consciousness for knowledge. But the jnani refers to someone who's basically already Brahman realized. So most of us come to Krishna because we want material happiness, we want to be free from material distress, some combination of the two, and maybe mixed with a little curiosity. By the way, most people take up religious life for those reasons. If you go to most religious systems and say, what are your goals? What are they going to say the goals are? Our religion. What are they aiming for in most churches and temples and mosques? And,
Salvation.
Salvation, which is freedom from distress or? Material advancement in this life or heaven. So people take up religion because they want, just like there's a lot of ministers who are preaching this prosperity religion. You know, you worship Jesus and you'll become prosperous. And these guys have, you know, tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of followers. I remember seeing one of them on a television in a waiting room in a hospital when I was waiting with a devotee who was having surgery. And this guy was speaking to a stadium of, I don't know, 30,000 people. Worship Jesus and you'll be rich. Right? And or they want to go to heaven. Or they want to go to heaven. That one lady I was talking to last night, she said, I'll see you in heaven. So they either want to go to heaven or they want salvation. So those are the Hare Krishna. So those are generally the reasons why people approach God. They want to enjoy the world or they want relief from the sufferings, which are very similar, but they're a little different. Or they're just curious. They want to know what is the truth, what is life about, is there a God, or some combination of those. And Krishna says, of all those, the one who comes to him in knowledge is the most dear, because such a person doesn't have any material desires. They have a desire, certainly. Even one who's a Brahmin realized has some selfish desire, but it's not a material desire. And then there are also people who don't surrender to Krishna. Namam duskritanam mudhavapatintainaradama maya paritakyanam asuram bhavamashritaha. So people who are just foolish, the guy who, you know, goes to work, comes home, sits in front of the television, watches a football game, drinks beer, has sex with his wife, and goes to bed. You know, basically is like an animal. So those sort of people don't surrender to Krishna. And then very sophisticated people who are interested in just polished aspects of the material world, they don't surrender to Krishna. People who study the scriptures, but in a perverted way. Well, Krishna says it's to him, but really it's this. They don't surrender to Krishna. And then the out-and-out atheists who hate God and want to kill him, they don't surrender to Krishna. And then, are there any other categories? Yes, certainly. There are people who worship demigods. There are people who have other systems of religion. And Krishna says that those people are not so intelligent because they're getting limited temporary results instead of the real thing. But they're neither in the category of people who surrender to Krishna nor are they in the category of people who don't surrender. And then Krishna says, look, I don't reveal myself to everybody because people are overwhelmed with desire and hatred. Desire and hatred. Attachment and aversion. And Rupa Goswami says, and this is important, he says that to be qualified for devotional service, you can't be too attached or too detached. Too detached. So too detached is also a disqualification. And we find sometimes people take the spiritual life and they try to take care of their attachment by stopping all attachment. But what did Krishna say right in the beginning of the seventh chapter? Become attached to me, with mind attached to me, with mind attached to me. Krishna doesn't say stop all attachment. So someone who's too detached, we'll get to this in the 12th chapter, actually has a disqualification. So Krishna doesn't show himself to people who are overwhelmed with desire or hatred. Hating sense objects, hating the body, hating the world is also a disqualification. It's also a sign of illusion. It's not a sign of spiritual advancement. And then Krishna ends by saying that if we follow this practice of yoga, we can know him even at the time of death. Then Arjuna asks a bunch of questions. Well, who's the Yajna Purusha? Who's Adidaiva? Who's Adibhautik? What's karma? What's living entity? And how can we know you at the time of death? It seems like a difficult time to know you. Has anyone here ever seen anyone die? Anyone here ever seen anyone die? Anything? Well, that's a hard time to do anything. I mean, we may find it hard to think about Krishna as we're going through our lives, what to speak of at the time of death. So Arjuna asks this question, and Krishna quickly answers his other questions, his definitions. By the way, that's also an important part of teaching, that you want to define your terms, and you want to make sure that the people that you're talking to understand the terms that you're using. And it's an important part of being a student to ask questions. Remember Krishna told Arjuna that? Prayaprashnena, you should ask questions of your guru. So Arjuna's listening to that. Sometimes you find people think, oh, I'm not supposed to ask questions. But Arjuna said, hey, Krishna, can you define your term? So that's important. If you hear something, you're not sure, what does the person mean? You should ask. So then Krishna starts saying that you can know him at the time of death. And in fact, whatever you think of at the time of death, yam yam vapi sram bhavam, is going to determine your next body. Now later on, we'll be discussing tomorrow, Krishna talks about how we get our next body according to all of our actions in this life and according to our association with the mode of nature. So he's talking about two things: how you live during your life, what are all your activities, what are your karma, what are your mentality, and what you think of at the time of death. So I saw this very clearly almost many years ago. We were taking our students out on a field trip, and on the way back to the school, we saw big billows of black smoke in the air. And the kids said, oh, we want to go see the fire. We want to go see the fire. Yeah. So we saw that it was an apartment complex, and there was one building that had 8 apartments in it that was in flames. And the flames were so high that we had to stay a great distance away from the building to look at the fire. It was about 30 minutes before the fire trucks got there. By the time they got there, the building was completely destroyed, and the flames were just huge fireball. And after, as they were hosing down the building, we all went up close, and we saw there was this young woman, maybe in her 20s. She was standing outside the building barefoot with her three young children, and her husband had come from work, and he was standing by her. It turned out that one of her neighbors in the building had left a pot of oil on the stove while she answered the phone. And the oil caught on fire, and the fire went up through the wall and destroyed the whole building. So this woman was telling us that as she saw the fire leaping up from the downstairs apartment, all of a sudden you see the wall going on fire. She said she was thinking, her oldest child was at school, and she had two little kids at home. And what she did was she just grabbed her children. She was even barefoot. She didn't put on her shoes. She didn't grab her wallet. She didn't grab her photo album. She didn't grab her birth certificate. She just grabbed her children. So I thought about this, that when the body dies, it's very much like, because we've already learned in the previous chapters, that we're not this body, that this body is just like a house or just like a set of clothes. When the body's on fire at the time of death, mentally, you do exactly what this woman did physically. Physically, she looks around her house, what's most important to me? And that's what she took. So death is a test of what really matters to us. Because I can say, I care most about such and such. This is what's most important to me. But when the house is on fire, what's really the most important to you is going to become obvious. Then you're actually going to go. Then there's no question of trying to impress somebody else with what's most important to you or trying to fool yourself. Therefore, it's the ultimate test. I often think of this whenever I get on an airplane, because I've spent too much of my life on airplanes. And, you know, they always give that boring safety announcement at the beginning of the flight. And I often think, okay, if the flight goes down, what would I take with me? You know, what would I grab as I'm getting off the plane? So that's the idea of death. And, of course, whatever's going to be most important to us at death is what's been most important to us during our life. It's not that one is going to go one's whole life thinking about money, 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 and all of a sudden God is going to be the most important at the time of death. That's not possible. It's going to be something we've cultivated during our life. There may be some rare instances where a person gets some extraordinary mercy at the time of death, but generally that is not the case. And in this section of Bhagavad Gita, I think it's eight times in the purports, that Prabhupada says, you should be chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And he's repeating the whole mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama. That this is the most important way that we can always be remembering Krishna throughout our life. And really make, Krishna keeps saying, right, he already said in the seventh chapter, be attached to me. Now, right after Krishna says this, that whatever we think about at the time of death determines our next life, he says, Mam anusmaram yujya cham. Mam means me. Anusmaram, smaram means remember. Yudha means to fight. So remember me and fight. Remember me and fight. So often people say, well, how can I remember Krishna? You're taking turns, like after you have like 3-minute intervals that you're each leaving the temple. One person leaves 3 minutes later, the next person leaves. Timing you when you go. So one may say, I have such, it's impossible for me to think of Krishna in my life. I have so many things on my mind, so many things I have to take care of. How can I think of Krishna? But we think about the situation Arjuna is in. Arjuna's on a battlefield. Battlefield means people are trying to kill you. I mean, we may have some, you know, so-called enemies in our life who are trying to defame us or give us a hard time, but I had one time someone try to kill me. But generally, we don't have people who are trying to kill us. And these were really powerful people. They were just ordinary thugs, you know. They were people who could fight with 10,000 soldiers. And not only are people trying to kill you, but you're trying to kill them. And, you know, if you're trying to I don't know if any of you have ever done like archery or rifle range or such. You know, I used to be in the rifle club in high school. I used to do archery. Just shooting, you know, a paper target. But what to speak of shooting a moving target with a shield who's also trying to kill you? I mean, what kind of mental concentration would you have to have? You have to have a lot more mental concentration than to make some paneer. You know, or to balance the accounts, or to do your laundry. And what things that we do in our life requires that intense concentration? Even today, Krishna took me on this walk up a mountain to see a waterfall, and the path was all stones covered with mud. It was vertical path of stones covered with mud, so it required all this concentration. But what would be the worst thing that happened if you didn't pay attention? You'd fall in mud. You know, but on a battlefield, if you're not paying attention, you're going to get your head cut off. You're going to get your arm cut off. And still Krishna is saying, Mam Anusmaram Yujaja. In that circumstance, Krishna is saying, think of me. In that circumstance. So that means thinking of Krishna is possible in all circumstances. Then one may ask, what will happen if I think of you, Krishna? And he's saying, then you'll come to me. And then Krishna gives a little description of the material and spiritual world. He said the spiritual world is not illuminated by the sun or the moon or electricity. It's self-luminous. And there's no miseries there. Abrahma bhuvana loka punarvarti arjuna mam pecha chakantaya punarjanma navijite. That anywhere you go in this material world, there's going to be misery. So please take that as a given. You know, we're thinking if I go here, if I go there, if I go... You know, all I have to do is say to people, I'm going to Hawaii, and they go, wow. But there's misery here, isn't there?
Oh, yeah.
It's not like this all of a sudden you come to Hawaii and there's no misery. All of a sudden all we have is unbounded joy just because there's plumeria trees and the turquoise ocean. You know, so he's saying even on the higher planets, there's still misery. People are, you just imagine how many people in the world, you have to imagine, you see them, are saving their money to come to Hawaii. Thinking, when I come to Hawaii, there'll be only happiness. And Krishna says, don't bother. Even if you go to the higher planets, there'll be misery. But if you come to my abode, then you will not take birth again. And then you will not suffer. That's going to be the result of thinking about Krishna. And then Krishna starts describing. He says, all right, now I'm going to tell you a most secret knowledge, Rajavidya Rajagui. Now that I've given you this basic knowledge, you may say, well, how is it secret? We're selling these Bhagavad Gitas on the street, we're selling them in our shop, we're selling them over the internet. You don't have to say so. Yeah, I was going to say, you go ahead and leave, you know, it's all right. I don't want you to feel obliged to stay. Thank you for coming. So we're giving these Bhagavad Gitas to everyone. How is it secret? So how is it secret? Anybody can say? How is it secret? Yes.
To truly realize, to have true realization, not just academic, not just jnana, but vijnana, that has to be descended from Krishna. We cannot ascend.
Thank you. You put it very nicely. So to have actual realized knowledge has to come from Krishna. You can't get it just by reading the print on the page. And I think we've all found that as we progress in Krishna consciousness, the books reveal themselves to us. It's quite an extraordinary thing. You know, you're reading these books, and as you go on in spiritual life, you pick up the same book that maybe you've read 20 times. And you read it and you say, where did that sentence come from in the purport? Somehow a sentence will speak to you in a way that it hasn't spoken to you before. And that keeps on going. There's not a point where that doesn't happen anymore. Even at the stage of perfection, one keeps on understanding Krishna more and more and more. And I think about it that these books are sort of in layers, and it's kind of encoded. And as you progress, the layers open up more and more and more. Example says that Krishna is personally present in the Bhagavatam. I went to one Bhagavatam class by our wonderful second-generation devotee, Radhika Raman, who maybe some of you have met. He used to be called Ravi Gupta and write for Bhakti Godhead. And when he was speaking on Bhagavatam, he was speaking on Krishna's pastimes out of Vrindavan, we really felt like Krishna had manifested in the temple room. It was almost as if Krishna had walked out of the book and was walking around in the temple room by his class. An unbelievable experience. So as we go deeper and deeper into the books, we find that there's Krishna. And the Krishna reveals himself. And Krishna Das Kaviraj refers to this. He says that I'm writing about things in here in Chaitanya Charitamrita that I really shouldn't talk about. He said, but I'm not worried about it because atheistic people won't understand them. I have noted that there's a difference between Srila Prabhupada's lectures and Srila Prabhupada's purports. Now, there's a number of differences, but one that's really struck me is that there's many topics Prabhupada discusses in his purports that he rarely, if ever, discusses in his lectures. That Prabhupada's lectures tend to be much more basic. And there's many advanced or complex topics that Prabhupada either never discusses in his lectures or touches upon just briefly. And I've noticed that people who basically just listen to Prabhupada's lectures but don't read Prabhupada's books are missing a whole aspect of Krishna consciousness. So there's some degree of what you present to the public. And of course, this is one area in which different groups that have descended from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati have different take on things. Like I know there's one group that only teaches very, very basic philosophy. In their classes, they say, we're only teaching basic Bhagavad Gita, we're not even going to have public classes on Bhagavatam. And then I know other groups who say, well, we're going to have public classes mostly on Krishna's Vrindavan and Leela. So there's a whole range of what devotees in various persuasions feel that should be presented to the public. But what we find is that what Srila Prabhupada did, although he referred to advanced topics in his lectures, certainly Prabhupada referred to Radharani and Mother Yasoda and we were seeing on Radhastami, he's certainly referring like that. As far as very deep and intimate things, those are in his purports. Now, it's also interesting, though, because we take these books and distribute them to the public. And I remember when Prabhupada was translating Chaitanya Charitamrita, I was out there at the airport giving out Chaitanya Charitamrita, and especially we're looking at like Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, or the talks with Ramananda Roy. I heard that Prabhupada's godbrother Sridhar Maharaj said, we don't discuss these talks between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. He's one person who's very conservative in that regard. I'd say more so than Srila Prabhupada. And Sridhar Maharaj said, you know, we'll read it. He said, if we're reading systematically through Chaitanya Charitamrita, we won't skip that section, but we won't discuss it. We'll just read it. And we'll never specifically have a class on it. Whereas Prabhupada actually wrote a little book specifically on the conversations between Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy, and he included those conversations in his teachings of Lord Chaitanya. And that's some of the most intimate material that's anywhere in our Shastra. Also, there's Nectar Devotion that has a lot of intimate pastimes between Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan and Chaitanya Charitamrita Anchalila, and we're distributing that to the public. But what we find is, again, that people understand it according to their level of realization. It's very, very interesting. And I've even found this is true in giving public classes. It's something that sort of astonishes me over and over and over again, that each person in the class will hear what I'm saying in a different way, depending on their own, where they're coming from, and their own position. And people sometimes will get deeper meanings from what I've said than I even realize, which is always interesting to me. Or, you know, they'll understand it in different ways. So that's very much going on. So we have this sort of balance between being careful what we present, that we should present things according to people's realization and according to the audience. Otherwise, we commit the offense of preaching the glories of the holy name to the faithless. So just like last night, there were those two ladies, one of whom was at the Hare Krishna temple for the first time. So I spent a lot more time talking about the background of the Battle of Kurukshetra than I would have otherwise. I kind of switched my presentation a little bit, and I was trying to word things a little differently because they were in the audience. And had those other gentlemen stay here, I would have also shifted things a little bit tonight. So you shift things for your audience. At the same time, you understand that people are going to take things according to their level. And therefore, it's not that you have to avoid completely presenting things which may be a little difficult to understand. You'll find that people just won't understand them anyway if they're not ready to understand them. It's quite an interesting phenomenon. All right, so Krishna there goes in the ninth chapter. He says, Maya tathamidam sarvam jagadavyaktamurtina matskani sarvabhutani nachaham te suvastitaha. A very interesting verse, because Krishna says, I am everywhere, but everything is not in me. I am everywhere, but I am not there. And everything's not in me, and it is in me. So I know when we would teach this verse in the Gurukul, I once heard these 6 and 7 year old children talking after the class and saying, but I thought Krishna is in everyone's heart. How does he say everything's resting in me, but I'm not there? So here, of course, Krishna's teaching Atinta Beda Beda Tattva. The philosophy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught, it's right there in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna, I'm everywhere, but I'm not everywhere. Everything's in me, but it's not in me. I am everything, I'm not everything. And both, how is this possible materially? We actually can't understand it. It's like if I say this floor is brown and it's also purple, and it's fully brown and it's fully purple at the same time. Now some cloth, I'm sure you've seen there's some pieces of cloth where it's like green woven one way and purple woven the other way. And as, you know, you move in the light, sometimes it looks green and sometimes it looks purple. But you don't see both at once. It's not fully green or fully purple. So Krishna's fully everywhere and he's fully not everywhere. And he's, everything's fully in him and everything's fully not in him. And then he's saying, I control everything, but I'm not responsible for what you do. Now, how is that? And I really like Sariputta Prabhu's example of a computer game. And this also relates to the fact that material nature and Krishna are the doer. And we'll get tomorrow into the idea of the five factors of action. And the idea that we're not really doing anything, which we talked about yesterday in the fifth chapter. So here Krishna says, I'm doing everything, but I'm not responsible. So think about a person playing a computer game. The computer game is designed by programmers. Right? When you're playing the game, you didn't design the game. Also, it's there by the mercy of whoever made the computer, whoever designed the computer, and by whoever supplying the electricity. They're doing everything. What are you doing? You as the operator are simply expressing your desires. You're saying, I want to be this character, I want to get this thing, I want... You're expressing your desires through the keyboard and the mouse or the joystick or whatever. But what's doing something? The program. You're not really doing it. You're not really making the character leap and jump and whatever they... I haven't played those games, but unfortunately I've seen people play them. And you're not really manipulating the character like that. That's being done by the programmer. And if there's no electricity, you can't do anything. Or if the server that the program is on crashes, you can't do anything. And it's also very similar to the material world in that what is it really? What, you know, you're seeing that there's all these characters and they're all interacting and they're having their own world and they're making money and they're building houses. But what is it really? You can say it's really just electricity. Or you could say it's really just ones and zeros. Or it's really just the light on the screen. So it's really something, but it's not what it appears to be. And you're not really doing those things. You're not really jumping off a cliff. You're not really killing the monster. You're not really doing any of those things. You're simply desiring, and the program is doing it. But, in this context, is the programmer responsible for what you're doing in the game? Is the utility company that's supplying the electricity, are they responsible for what's happening in the game? Is the computer manufacturer responsible? No. Who's responsible? You are, but you're not really doing any of it. You're just desiring. And of course, it's not really happening. It's not really happening. Something's happening. There's electricity going through the wires, and there's ones and zero going in the CPU, and there's lights flashing on the screen. Something's happening, but what's happening is not what you think is happening. So in the same way, we're not really sitting here and talking. That's not happening. We're manipulating a character that's doing that. It's not us. We're just observing, and we're desiring. And this is just the three modes of nature interacting under the direction of Krishna, but we're still responsible for what happens here. And we so-called enjoy or suffer the results in illusion. Our suffering and enjoyment is all illusion. All right, now Krishna here gives us the four nutshell verses of Bhagavad Gita. Ham sarvasya kavalo mata sarvam prabhajate iti matva bhajante mam buddhabhava samanvitaha matchatam adhitapanam bodayantas prasparam katayantas chumam nityam chishanti charumanticha and tesam sadhajitanam bhajatam prithipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tamyena mam payantite tesam evadukam patam aham agyanatam tamaha nasayam yatmabhava stavgyana deepena bhashvata. Krishna says, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service with all their hearts. So who am I? I am Krishna. Who is the devotee? They are the wise people. What do? They worship me. How specifically do they worship me? They always think about me. A recurring theme in Bhagavad Gita. Always think about Krishna. They always think about me. They like to talk about me. Parasparam, they like to talk with each other. Garuda was telling us how some scholars said, there's nothing in the Shastra about having a society of devotees. No, paraspara. They talk with each other, chusyantita, ramanticha, and they get great satisfaction from, and don't we enjoy that? Isn't that the most pleasurable thing? We're talking about Krishna. To see Krishna had this pastime, Krishna's like this. Immediately there's so much pleasure. And just like it described the residents of Vrindavan after Krishna killed Bakasura, and they were just seeing Krishna as if he returned from the death, and they forgot all the material miseries. And you find that also, you know, in the kirtan or in katha, you forget everything. It all finished, and you're just thinking about Krishna. Then what does Krishna do? All right, he's the greatest. The devotees are worshiping him. They're speaking about him. They're enjoying speaking about him. What does he do? He destroys all ignorance, which is the cause of all our suffering. All of our suffering is due to ignorance. Why you suffer in the game? Because you think that you're the character in the game. You think that the suffering is actually happy to you. Krishna destroys that. Gyanadipena Bhasvata. He lights up the heart with knowledge. So you see the truth. So you actually see the truth. Oh, I'm a soul. I'm not this body. I'm not part of this world. None of this is actually happening to me. It's all just like a dream. Oh, there you are. You're God. You're the ultimate reality. Look at all of your wonderful pastimes. So he lights up the heart with transcendental knowledge. And of course, for the beginner also, he shows us what is illusion. Let me show you how you're materially contaminated. So as we chant Hare Krishna, as we advance in devotional service, we start to see things honestly. And hopefully we'll actually talk about that in class on Monday. We keep almost getting there and not quite getting there. Okay. Krishna also talks about this theme that keeps repeating, that some people don't serve him, but they go for something lesser. That even though I'm the Supreme, some of them worship him impersonally, some of them do this, some of them do that. And Krishna says, but really, all these different paths have different results. And the best thing is just to surrender to him. Oh, and I should go back a little bit to the 9th chapter, sorry, and talk about the end of the 9th chapter, which I forgot. Because Krishna says there that if you may say, well, I'd like to do the impersonal, or I'd like to worship the demigods, but the easiest thing is to just worship Krishna. And he said, it's so easy. Patram pushpam palam trayam. You can just give me some water. You can just give me a little leaf. You know, it's very hard to make someone happy just by giving them a little water. Imagine some man says to his wife, my dear, my service I'm going to do for you is I'm going to give you a little water. That wouldn't work very well. Krishna says, I'll be happy just with a little water. You don't have to do a whole lot of austerities. Like seeing this waterfall today is so much austerity to see a waterfall. Unbelievable austerity. You know, 1 hour of climbing up this mud-covered path where at any moment you might be completely, you know, slip. You have to, like, watch every toehold. Intense austerity. Krishna says, no, you don't have to do such austerity. Just offer me a little bit of water. And just dedicate whatever you do. Whatever you do, whatever austerities you perform. There's a very similar verse in the Bible, by the way, in Corinthians. If ever you're preaching to Christians, you can pull out the two verses, compare them side by side. They're practically identical. And then right after that, Krishna says, Manmana Bhava Mad Bhakta, always think of me. And that verse is repeated again in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, right at the very, very end of the Bhagavad Gita. And we'll talk about the significance of that tomorrow night. So now, after Krishna said all of this, sorry, I backtracked a little bit to the 9th chapter. After Krishna says all of this, Arjuna says, wow, you told me how you're the essence of everything. You're the taste of water. You're the light of the sun. Can you please give me more specific details? And, oh, something else I should have read. I read you the... I'm going to go back again. Sorry. I'm doing this. Those of you who are very systematic will be upset with me, so please forgive me. I read to you from the 7th chapter, and I should read this from the 9th also. Okay, in the 9th chapter, Krishna says, I am the ritual, the sacrifice, the offering to the ancestors, the healing herb, the transcendental chant. I am the butter and the fire and the offering. I am the father of the universe, the mother, the support, and the grandsire. I am the object of knowledge, the purifier, the syllable Om. I am the Rig, Sama, and Yajurveda. I am the goal, the sustainer, the master, the witness, the abode, the refuge, and the most dear friend. I am the creation and the annihilation, the basis of everything, the resting place, and the eternal seed. I give heat and withhold and send forth the rain. I am immortality and death personified. So most of these have been general. Now Arjuna is asking for specific. And Krishna is saying, you know, I accept as truth everything you've told me. You're the supreme abode. You're the supreme purifier. You're the supreme God. And not only do I see this, but all the sages also say the same thing. Please tell me how you're manifested in the world. And then Krishna gives a very detailed description. He says, I'm only going to tell you the prominent ones, otherwise we'll be here forever. We'll never fight this war I just told you to fight. He says, I'm the Supersoul, beginning, middle, and end of all things. Of the Adityas, I am Vishnu. I was reading in class about how Diti wanted to kill all the Adityas. Of lights, I am the sun. Of the Maruts, I am the Maruts. We're also reading about the Maruts, right? How Diti gave birth to the 49 Maruts. Of the Maruts, I am Marichi. Among the stars, I am the moon. And the Samaveda, Indra. I am the mind, the living force. Krishna says, I am the mind. I can't remember. I should have looked this up. Anyway, it's either in Krishna's letter to the gopis that Uddhava sends, or it's in Krishna directly talking to the gopis in Kurukshetra, where Prabhupada makes the point that because Krishna is the mind, that we're always in the presence of Krishna. We can always meditate on the fact that we're with Krishna by the fact that we have a mind. I am Shiva. I am Kuvera. I am Agni, Meru, Brihaspati, Kartikeya, the ocean. That's a pretty easy way to remember Krishna in Hawaii. Krishna says, I'm the ocean. I'm Bhrigu, Om, again, second time he said Om. I am Japa. Instead of sacrifices, I am the chanting of the holy names, Japa. Of all sacrifices. I've thought about this a lot, how a lot of the other sacrifices that we do involve some sense gratification, but japa doesn't. Prasadam is also enjoyable. Kirtan is also enjoyable. Nice music, nice dancing. But japa is just pure sacrifice from a material point of view. In the Himalayas, banyan tree, he says. Oh, we've got Krishna right here in our yard. I am Narada, Chitrarata, Kapila, Uchishrava, Aravata, I am the king. Thunderbolt, Sarabi, I am Cupid, Vasuki, Ananta, Varuna, Aryama, Yama, the Lord of Death, Prahlad, Time, always in the presence of time, the Lion, Garuda, the Wind. That's another thing we have a lot of here, right? A lot of wind. Purifiers, I am the wind. Wielders of weapons, I am Ram, that means Parasaram. Shark, the Ganges, beginning, middle, and end. Krishna's already said that, right? In the ninth chapter, some of these things he repeats. Science of the self, the conclusive truth. That's a very nice purport. Of letters, I'm the letter A. That's actually not the English letter A. That's the Sanskrit letter A, which is a sound that you make without using your tongue or your teeth or your lips at all. It's the most basic sound from which all other sounds build. The dual compound, inexhaustible time. Again, he said he's time. Brahma, all-devouring death. Second time he said he's death. Krishna's even death. Even those who take pleasure in death. They want to watch their slasher movies or be warriors. Or that's also Krishna. It's also Krishna. Generating principle of all that is yet to be. Among women, I am fame, fortune, fine speech, memory, intelligence, steadfastness, and patience. Always strikes me that Krishna says that memory and intelligence are feminine qualities. We won't talk about that anymore. Brihat Sama, of poetry on the Gayatri. Months, I am November, December. Of seasons, I am the flower-bearing spring. The gambling of cheats. I like the gambling of cheats because in gambling, everyone agrees to be cheated. You sit down at the table and you say, all right, deal me in and cheat me. Because generally, not cheating means that I offer you some goods or services in exchange for money. But gambling, what are you giving anybody? Of course, I know one devotee who's gotten into gambling, and he says, I'm giving them entertainment. But really, you're not giving anybody anything. You're giving them just the hope that they might cheat you. Right? Each of us puts in a dollar, and we spin a wheel, or we play a card game, or whatever, and whoever wins, they're going to get all, how many of us are here? 12 people. So you get all $12. So you're thinking, oh, maybe I'll get to cheat my friends. But everyone's agreeing. It's open cheating. It's not just like some kind of scam where you're not sure if you're getting cheated or not, or maybe you don't know at all you're getting cheated. It's open. I'm going to cheat you. Or people go to Las Vegas. Everybody knows the casinos have got to be making money. Duh. Of course they're making money. Well, if they're making money, then the odds are against you. You're going to lose. I think this is not, you know, you don't need to know statistics to know that the chances are that you're going to lose. So it's open cheating. And people will willingly come. Yes, cheat me. So of gambling, I am cheats. Krishna is the greatest in everything. Prabhupada was, the class Prabhupada gave me in Philadelphia in 75 when I was there. He said, if you want to cheat Krishna, then he was the greatest cheater. Of the splendid, I am the splendor. How many splendid things do we have here? There's beautiful plants and mountains and ocean and wind. And Krishna is the active principle of splendor. I am victory. That exaltation you feel when you're victorious, that's Krishna. I am adventure. Right? Even the little adventure I had today of climbing up the mud-covered mountain. Right? The strength of the strong. Vasudev, Arjuna, Vyas, Usana. Of means of suppressing lawlessness, I am punishment. Of those who seek victory, I am morality. Very interesting. If you want to be victorious, be moral. Don't necessarily be more clever or have the best allies, but have morality. Of secret things, I am silence. Of the wise, I am wisdom. The generating seed of all existences. There is no being moving or non-moving that can exist without me. So we can see how just one of these is a very easy way to manmana bhava magbhakto, to always think of Krishna, and certainly to become attached to Krishna. These are very wonderful and exciting and pleasing and thrilling and pleasurable things that we can become attached to. And then Arjuna says, thank you for telling me all this. Now I want to see it. Give me the audio-visual presentation. I remember once going to the seminar of Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj. He was talking very elevated subject matter about chanting the holy name. And at a certain point, I said to the organizers of the conference, I said, I need a handout. I just can't follow it without something visual. It's too complicated. And so these things that Krishna is describing, Arjuna is saying, it's too complicated. Let me see it. So Krishna says, all right. He says, but you can't see me with the eyes that you have now, because the eyes that Arjuna had was eyes of loving friendship. Now, actually, the eyes that Krishna gave Arjuna it was a downgrade. It wasn't an upgrade. Krishna gave Arjuna the eyes of the demigods. Because Arjuna is used to seeing Krishna as his friend. He says, all right, if you want to see me as a universe. And then Krishna's expanding, right? Many eyes and arms and bellies everywhere without limit. And Arjuna sees all time at one time. He sees past, present, and future all in one moment. And he sees all space in one place. And first he's just noticing this great universal form. And he's, of course, in awe. And then the form switches. It switches from just this form of awe and majesty to this ghastly form. And Arjuna starts seeing, because Krishna told him, he said, I'm going to show you some things that you're interested in. This wasn't just a universal form. It was a universal form specifically for Arjuna's interest. And Arjuna starts seeing everyone running into the malice of Krishna. And especially he sees Bhishma, Drona, Karna, people he was, Duryodhana, people he was really concerned about. And he saw his own soldiers also being smashed by Krishna's teeth. So Prabhupada, talking about this, says that Krishna can eat anything. In fact, Krishna does eat everything. Krishna's even eating the Brahmins and the cows. You know, Krishna's eating the whole universe in the form of eternal time. But in his original form as Krishna, he only wants patram pushpam palantam. He's not eating these things in the sense of relishing a relationship. So then Arjuna becomes very afraid. He says, who are you? What is your mission? He says, I am time. At least the third time Krishna said, I am time. And I've come to destroy all people, to destroy all people. So Krishna not only is nourishing, but he's also destruction. So people say, you know, God is beauty, God is love. Harikesh talked about this, how he once went to preach at a seminary, and the priests were showing this film of flowers and mountains and, you know, all these beautiful things. And they were saying, God is love. God is beauty. And then he asked them, well, what about other things? What about trash? What about stool? Is God that too? You know, and they didn't know what to say. But here Krishna is saying he's also destruction. He's also time. By the way, Prabhupada talks about that this time is Lord Shiva. That this agent of destruction in time is not Krishna in his original form, but Krishna is Lord Shiva. And then Arjuna starts becoming distressed. He offers prayers, glorifying Krishna, and then he also asks for forgiveness. And this is one difference between Arjuna and Mother Yasoda. We don't find Mother Yasoda when she sees a different manifestation of the universal form. She doesn't say, oh, Krishna, please forgive me for treating you as my son. She doesn't say that. She does say, wow, I'm an illusion thinking that Nanda Maharaj is my husband and Krishna is my son and all this from Vrindavan belong to me, which is another interesting topic. Because in the ultimate reality, Nanda Maharaj is her husband. Right, we can discuss this. What is ultimate truth? Is the ultimate truth that Nanda Maharaj is Krishna's father, or is the ultimate truth that Krishna is Nanda Maharaj's father? Depends on whether you're looking at things from tattva or rasa. And what's a higher truth? It's very hard to say. So Mother Yasoda was saying, oh, I'm just thinking that everything here belongs to me. But she never lost her feeling of motherly affection for Krishna. She never started. We find like Devaki and Vasudev, they become reverential towards Krishna sometimes. After Krishna killed Kamsa, they become very reverential. But Mother Yasoda never becomes like that with Krishna. She never starts saying, oh, Krishna, you're the Supreme Lord, let me worship you. Even we find like the gopis, when they're looking for Krishna, they says, you know, you're not really the son of Mother Yasoda, you're really the indwelling witness in everyone's heart. They say that, they know that, they never become reverential. They never become, you know, just this sort of move back fear mentality, whereas Arjuna does. Arjuna does. Although he's Krishna's friend, when he sees the universal form, his friendly relation becomes temporarily obscured. And this is, of course, a place where Prabhupada talks about that our relationship with the Lord is eternal. It can become covered for some time, but it's eternal. Now, what's interesting is at the end of the chapter, then Arjuna asks Krishna to show his forearm form and two-arm form, and Krishna says that you can only see this form, any of these forms, by devotion, by revelation. And Krishna says you can't see them by austerity, by studying the Vedas, by giving in charity. And then later when he says it's only by devotion, Prabhupada in that purport talks about how you can offer charity and devotional service to austerity. All the things that Krishna said you couldn't see him by, Prabhupada says if you do those things in bhakti, you can see Krishna. Then this verse here, which Prabhupada says is the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. He says, this verse is considered to be the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the last verse of chapter 11. My dear Arjuna, he who engages in my pure devotional service, free from the contamination of fruitive activities and mental speculation. Ooh, sounds like the key verse of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Anya Vilasita Sunyam Jnanakama Anavritam. So Krishna's saying the same thing. Pure devotional service, free from contamination of fruitive activity and mental speculation. Who works for me? So you do something practical for Krishna, not just, I love you. Yes, I'm very religious. Do something practical, demonstrate your love, who makes me the supreme goal of his life, and this is important, and who is friendly to every living entity, he certainly comes to me. We were talking yesterday how in every religious system of the world, two things are preached. Love God and be kind to all living entities. And we hear Krishna saying, this is the essential verse of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is saying that you should just be pure devotional service. Don't be interested in karma and don't be covered by karma and gyan. Do some practical work for me and be friendly to every living entity. So such an important thing. Not that I only serve God and I kill the poor animals or I'm nasty to the other human beings. And not either that I'm nice to all living beings and I don't serve God. That I just engage in social work and I just engage in humanitarian work and I don't worship God. Both need to be there. So then Arjuna says, okay, what's better, the personal or the impersonal? And Krishna says, Klesho dikataraste shamavikta saktatecha samavyakta higatir dukam dehavadbiravapite. He says, this impersonalism is really a hard time. And Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's hard in two ways. It's hard to achieve it, and then when you get it, it's hard to go forward. And the example I always give is of my nephew. So my nephew became, in his own tradition, a brahmachari. He was living in a brahmachari ashram, and he had his guru. And they were very, very strict. You know, he wasn't able to see or talk to any young women. And when he got to be, I think, like 21, 22, he went to his guru and said, I think I'd like to marry. And his guru said to him, well, you know, all these years you haven't looked at any women. He said, I can introduce you to some suitable woman, but you're going to have to look at her. So the impersonalists, they're just stopping. Prabhupada said that they're trying to access non-perceptual feelings, which I've never understood what he means by that. But they're just trying to stop all desires. They're basically trying to become dead. They're trying to commit a kind of suicide. They're trying to stop all attraction, all desires, all relationships. So first of all, that's almost impossible. If you read about people who become successful at this, like among the Jains, there's Mahavir, and you read about what austerities he went through for 13 years in order to give up everything. As he was walking, one time he got a thorn in his eye, he left it in. I mean, this was the kind of study, if you can look him up on the internet, Mahavir, and read about his life and what kind of austerities he did to become 100% detached. So difficult. It's not the kind of thing the average person can do. It's not that most of his followers who were Jains, that they, you know, walk around naked and don't pull thorns out of their eyes. Who can live like that? Almost just like Arjuna said, you know, I can't go to the Himalayas and sit on deerskin and just totally fix my mind on one point. And that was for devotional service. When to speak of something impersonal, who can do it? So most impersonalists are not really following their process, are they? I mean, most people who claim to be impersonalists, they're not giving up everything in the material world. Hardly any of them are. It's just some philosophy that they're speaking. Very difficult. Then once you achieve it, you can't go further. You've cut off all of your feelings. And then God comes in front of you, and you can't look at him. You're so used to not looking at anything that now you can't look at God either. And unfortunately, Avasuddha Buddhiya, because it's the nature of the soul to have relationships and attachments, you can't stay on that platform. So you work so hard to achieve it. You work so hard to achieve it. But once you get there, the very process prevents you from going forward. And you can't stay there. One thing I was thinking of as we were walking up that mountain is, we got to come back down again. It's not like you can go there and you can stay there. So you achieve your personal realization through so much trouble. And then you just come back down again because it's very, very hard to go forward. But Krishna does say, he does say that it is possible for the impersonalist to achieve him eventually. But it's interesting, he says, that okay, for those who fully worship the unmanifested, that which lies beyond the perception of the senses, the all-pervading, inconceivable, unchanging, fixed and immovable, by controlling the various senses and being equally disposed to everyone, such persons engage in the welfare of all at last achieve me. So Krishna's even saying, be nice to everybody if you want to be an impersonalist. Sometimes we say, oh, people aren't being nice to everybody, they're impersonalists. No, Krishna says, even if you want to be an impersonalist, you better be nice to everybody. And you better engage in the welfare of all. So there's no out. There's no, well, I'm just going to treat people meanly. So after explaining how, yes, you can achieve perfection through impersonalism, but it's a lot of trouble, then Krishna starts describing, listen, Arjuna, again, he says, same thing. Fix your mind upon me. This is the essence of Krishna consciousness, to be conscious of Krishna. Not just to go through some, okay, I'm showing up for Mangalartik, I'm waving the incense, I'm moving my fingers on the beads and making sure my mouth moves at the same time. I'm stirring the pot, I'm sweeping the floor. But to be conscious of Krishna. Saying, just fix your mind in me, engage all your intelligence in me. He said, but if you can't do that, like that woman said, I can't do that. Then what to do? Then he says, do abhyas yoga. He said, abhyasa yogena tato mam iccha tam dananjaya. Iccha. Iccha means desire. Iccha means desire. So Krishna is saying, then do abhyas yoga to develop a desire. Abhyas means study or practice, what we also call sadhana bhakti, practice bhakti. Now think for a minute about what bhakti is. Bhakti means loving devotional service. So how do you practice love? Okay, guys, we're going to practice love now. Everybody, love. I mean, how do you do that?
Service.
You do that through service. And you also do that by saying, what are the activities of the people who have love?
Also by knowing the object of love.
By knowing the object of love. Right? Just like in the second chapter, Krishna told us by contemplating sense objects, one gets attached to them. What to speak of if you contemplate Krishna, who's a lot more attractive than any sense object. And you get attracted, we get attached to the sense object so much that we lust over them, we lose our intelligence over them. And how that's what the devotees do with Krishna. They're contemplating Krishna until they just go mad with love for him. They lose all care for the material world. So we see those who love Krishna, what do? They much chitam madgata pranam bodhiyantas parasparam. They talk about Krishna. Satatam kirtayantama. They're always chanting about Krishna. They think about Krishna. They do some work for Krishna. What do? And we imitate their activities. Basically, just like if you want to learn how to be a piano player, you're imitating the activities. And at first it's awkward, like we had that little chart yesterday. Remember the steps?
Yeah.
They were first what?
Unconscious competence.
So Krishna's saying you should be automatically attracted to me. If you can't, then come to the conscious competence platform. Be intentionally. Do it intentionally. As I say, we don't want to skip this. Oh, it's awkward. Oh, it's difficult. I've heard people say, well, I'm not going to chant until it just comes spontaneously. It's going to be a long time. One has to practice, and at first it's under rules and regulations, and the spiritual master says 16 rounds. Oh, it's already 9:30, I have 3 rounds left, I'm tired, I don't want to chant anymore. Someone who loves Krishna wouldn't be thinking like that. You ever seen people in love? Or any of us, any of you have ever been in love? Wouldn't think like that. Your husband or your wife or the person, your fiancé, calls you at 9:30 at night. You don't say, oh, I'm too tired to talk to you. Not if you're really in love. Talk to them till 2 in the morning. You're not looking at the clock. You don't say to a person you're madly in love with, we've already talked for 2 hours. I mean, it's enough. I have other things I want to do. You're not multitasking when you're talking to a person you're madly in love with. Okay? You're sitting by the phone waiting for them to call. All you're thinking about, when are they going to call? When are they going to call? When are they going to call? I remember, I don't know if I should say, because you know these people, so anyway, when I was with some young devotees who were associating before they got married, and they'd be chatting all night on the computer, right? Talking all night on the phone. You can't get them off the phone. So this devotee once asked Prabhupada, how do we know when there's quality in our chanting? Prabhupada said, when 16 rounds isn't enough, when you want to chant 16,000 rounds. Right? But you think, oh, I got to put down my japa beads and go do something for Krishna, but I want to just be with Krishna. So that's love. And Abhyas Yoga is, okay, right, well, okay, I got another 10 minutes. How long is it taking me to chant this round? I have other things I want to do. Now I'm going to go to sleep. I got to hang out with Krishna some more. I'm supposed to read this book. Oh, my guru told me I'm supposed to read. All right, what did I read? I don't know what I read, but at least I read. Okay, I'm a Malarti who's leading the kirtan. Yeah, there was Panchatantra there. That's Abhyas Yoga. But the purpose of Abhyas Yoga is to develop icha, is to develop a desire. That's the purpose. Everything we'll be reading about tomorrow, everything is seated on desire. We are an illusion, my dear friends, because we want to be an illusion. You were just asking me, I want to surrender, why can't I surrender? And the essence is, I can't fully surrender because I don't really want to fully surrender. So by practicing Abhyas Yoga, we start getting a desire. We start thinking, I really want to serve Krishna. I really want to love Krishna. I don't want to try to think that I'm a troller. I don't want to play this game anymore. I'm tired of being in an illusory world. And some people say, well, I can't even do that. I can't even do a Abhyas yoga. I can't even do 16 rounds. I can't even follow the regulative principles. I'm trying for 20 years and I can't give up marijuana or whatever. You know. And then Krishna says, all right, then do some work for me. Do some practical work for me. And in the story of Pritchard Maharaj, Prabhupada says that someone who helps the movement will eventually get the same result as those who are fully practicing. By working for Krishna, again, what's the idea? To become attached to Krishna, to develop the desire, and then say, hey, I want to actually take up the process. Then Krishna says, okay, suppose you can't even do that. Suppose you can't even do some work for me. Then give in charity. Now, this is important because sometimes we denigrate charity. But Krishna is saying, if you can't even work for me, give in charity. And this is something we should be encouraging people. Why? Because it gets the mood up, sacrifice. Takes us right back to the beginning of Bhagavad Gita. The essence is sacrifice. If you can't sacrifice for the supreme cause, at least sacrifice for something. At least get in the mood of something. At least get in the mood of, I'm not the enjoyer. I want to give to a higher cause. He said you can also meditate, you can also cultivate knowledge, but the best thing to do is to give up the results of your work. The best thing to do is give in charity. The best thing to do is give up something that you're attached to. Give that up for a higher cause. And then Krishna starts glorifying the devotees. And I'm going to just read these verses. As I say, I find this some of the most humbling parts of the Shastra. One who is not envious, but is a kind friend to all living entities. Oh, do we see a theme here? Who does not think himself a proprietor, who is free from false ego, equal in happiness and distress, who is tolerant, always satisfied, self-controlled, engaged in devotional service with determination, mind and intelligence fixed on me. We have another theme here. Now this is, this verse. This is a verse we should probably put up on the wall, you know. He for whom no one is put into difficulty. He by whom no one is put into difficulty and who is not disturbed by anyone. Who doesn't put anyone else into difficulty and who is not disturbed by other people's behavior. Who is equal poised in happiness and distress. Didn't he just say that? Fear and anxiety is very dear to me. Who's not dependent on the ordinary course of events. Who can serve Krishna in any circumstance. I'm in a Siberian labor camp, I'll serve Krishna. I'm in Hawaii, I'll serve Krishna. People are praising me, I'll serve Krishna. People are blaming me, I'll serve Krishna. My body's healthy and strong, I'll serve Krishna. My body's in the ICU, I'll serve Krishna. Who is pure expert, with the expert is important. Prabhupada said devotees should know something of everything and everything of something. He said specifically brahmachari life is for learning everything of something and something of everything and everything of something. Sometimes we have this little plug here. Sometimes we have this mistaken idea that the Gurukul meant that you don't learn anything practical. But Prabhupada actually, in lectures in Bombay, where he was talking about both Gurukula and Brahmachari Ashram in general. He said, this is for learning not only the Shastra, but also learning practical work. How to manage for Krishna, how to do this for Krishna, how to do that for Krishna. One should be expert. Without cares, free from all pains, and not striving for some result. Right? Where is the devotee getting their happiness from? Within. Who neither rejoices nor grieves, laments nor desires, who renounces auspicious and inauspicious things. In other words, whether life is auspicious or inauspicious, I go on serving Krishna. Equal to friends and enemies. Equiposed in honor and dishonor, heat and cold. I wrote trouble with the heat and cold thing. Happiness and distress, fame and infamy, who's always free from contaminating association, silent and satisfied with anything, who doesn't care for any residence, fixed in knowledge, and engage in devotional service is very dear to me. Those who follow this imperishable path of devotional service and have completely engaged themselves with faith, making me the supreme goal, are very, very dear to me. Okay, so just a quick review. If we're going to meditate on Krishna, we have to know him. As Krishna ends the sixth chapter, meditate on me. Krishna talks there from the seventh chapter, how he's the essence of everything. Then he says, some people surrender to me, some people don't surrender to me. Other people may worship the demigods, right? And they don't worship me because they're overcome by desire and hatred. But if you do worship me, you can know me even at the time of death. Then he talks of that. Arjuna asks some questions. Krishna answers them. Krishna says, whatever we think about at the time of death determines our destination. Therefore, mam anusmaram yujacha, think of me even when you're fighting. If you think of me, you'll go to the spiritual world, which is distinct from the material world of miseries. And then Krishna describes how he's everywhere, but not everywhere, Achintya Beta Tattva. He talks about the divine energy, how those who serve him, they're always chanting about him. Says that other people have other results in worshiping the demigods, but worshiping him is very simple. You just give him a leaf or flower, fruit or water. And he also explains again how he's the butter, he's the herb, he's the sacrifice. Then he says, I'm the origin of everything. The devotees worship me. They enjoy talking about me. I enlighten them with transcendental knowledge. And Arjuna says, tell me more how you're in the world. And then he says, I'm the ocean, I'm the wind, I'm Garuda. Then Arjuna says, I want to see it. Krishna shows a universal form, all time at one time, all place in one places. Then he shows his form of time. Arjuna becomes afraid. He says, show me your original form. Then Krishna says, really, the only thing is just be free of karma and jnana. Just worship me. Be kind to all living entities, lest you come to me. Is it better, the impersonal or the personal? Arjuna says. Krishna says, the impersonal will work, but after a long time, and it's really troublesome. It's troublesome to do, troublesome for the result. Just worship me as a person. Just love me. If you can't do that, do a Abhyasa Yoga to get a desire. If you can't do that, work for me. If you can't do that, give in charity. You can also meditate and cultivate knowledge. And if you're my devotee, then you're going to have all of these wonderful qualities. So tonight we went a little longer. I don't get a prize for stopping on time. Are there questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections? Tomorrow I have to end on time because the Arctic starts. We're going to do a Sunday feast. We're going to do 13 through 18. Yes?
There's a little comment. We're talking about Krishna's asking us to offer a flower, fruit, leaf, or water, but he put a proviso on that.
He says you have to offer with love.
Devotion.
With devotion.
Not just to physically give. Of course, that's the start, but...
Well, that's the work for me. So, in other words, if I've got three levels. One, I'm giving just out of love. Like the cowherd boys, they're giving Krishna. Of course, we're reading about how sometimes the cowherd boys, they take the stuffing out of their samosas and they put jasmine flowers in it instead. Anyway. So the devotees are offering on that level of love. You know, and then there's those of us who are doing Abhyasa Yoga, who don't really have that love, but we're practicing the love. We're trying to have the love. We're at least going through the motions of someone who has the love. In some way or other, we're trying to develop some love. And then there's a person who's not even really trying to do that, but they're just at least working for Krishna. They're just officially. So that's also a stage. But Krishna is accepting according to the amount of love. I mean, just like even for any of us, you know, if someone gives us a gift just officially, we may still take it in our hand. But how we feel about it is going to be very different depending on how much love they give us. I mean, that's just, it's always like that. Or if someone gives us a gift because they want something in return, right? We may still take it in our hand, but we're going to be very wary. But how much we accept a gift that's given in love? Now, that's a completely different... Then it's not really, the gift becomes inconsequential. If someone's giving us a gift because they want something in return, the gift is inconsequential and we're kind of worried about the relationship, you know. If they just give something officially, okay, because they're supposed to. Right. But if they give something with love, then we're always thinking about the love. I had about a year or so, I guess, a devotee gave me a gift of the chatter from the Bhaktisananta deity in Italy, and it was, I don't know if any of you are familiar with Jewish ritualistic garments, but just like our men wear a Brahmin's thread, so the Orthodox Jews wear also prayer threads, and it's on a garment called a tallis, which is very much like a chadar, but it has threads at the bottom. So someone had bought one of these, bought actually a tallis for the Bhaktisananta deity to wear as a chadar, and so it was very odd, it's a garment that men wear, that Jewish men wear in their practice. So she gave me this, and I was thinking, well, do I wear this? You know, it's kind of odd. I thought that, you know, many of the devotees wouldn't notice, but if I go out in the public, they're going to notice that I'm wearing this, you know, ritualistic, male ritualistic garment. But anyway, she gave it with a lot of love, and it was Bhakti Siddhanta's mama. So I wore it for quite some time. I remember I was wearing it in Soho when I was giving class and people were filming it. And I know they're going to put the films on YouTube. And I'm thinking, you know, this is going to be interesting. So I didn't keep it, Lord. I kept it for a few months. But every time I wore it, I thought both about Bhaktisiddhanta and about the person who gave it. Even though it was a little funny garment. So we have that. You know, someone gives us even some insignificant thing or something that's not even that useful to us. But because there's some love, therefore we accept it as a great gift. Actually, my daughter-in-law's father, Oparindapal, some of you may know him, he told me that he really understood the meaning of this verse when one of his sons at the age of 6 handed him a stick. Here, Daddy. Here's a stick I found for you. And he said that he felt overwhelmed with love and happiness taking the stick from his son. I thought, that's what Krishna means. Just give me some water. Just give me a leaf. Just give me a little flower. And just, it's that, what Krishna is hungry for is that exchange of love.
Question.
Yes.
You're explaining how Krishna says that he is really our intelligence, he is our ability, we're not the doer. So, particularly also at this stage, what is our perception of our own self? How do we see our own self? I mean, if we're not doing anything, or it's kind of Krishna's doing it all, it's kind of...
We're just like that guest I had at my house one time, came with his family, woke up at 5 in the morning, didn't eat, didn't sleep, didn't beat, didn't bathe, didn't go to the bathroom, didn't brush his teeth, sat down in front of the computer and started playing a computer game. And we called him, it's time for lunch. I don't think he ate all day. You know, went to bed at about 11 o'clock at night. That's the position of a conditioned soul. We're sitting at the computer terminal desiring.
So that's all we are doing.
We're just
desiring.
We're just desiring. And Krishna creates this phantasmagoria to fulfill our desires. And we're so absorbed in it. Like this boy was so absorbed, he didn't even come for prasad. So Krishna's calling us. He's saying, come, come. Eat with the family. Or Prabhupada gives the example, of course he gives us this example for an opposite reason, but he talks about in a room, like sometimes in a class somebody falls asleep. So technically they're in the room, but they're not there. The Prabhupada gives that as the example of the transcendentalist, that technically they appear to be in the material world, but they're not there. So when we actually awaken, when you actually awaken, you may still be in the game. You may still be playing the game, but you're playing it then for Krishna's service to preach to the other people who are in the game, who are only able to relate through their false identity. You know, the people who are so absorbed in the game, you can't call them on the phone, they can't answer it because they'll only talk to you through the game. So one may still be there as Krishna's service for preaching, but you're no longer interested in that. You're no longer thinking that's where your happiness is. But it's all Krishna. Ultimately, it's all. Then you're, if you're saying Krishna's our intelligence, our ability, then you're also looking at a chinta beta beta tattva. In one sense, we're all Krishna. My body is Krishna. I'm Krishna. My intelligence is Krishna. My ability is Krishna. In another sense, I'm also separate, and I also have my own intelligence. But I'm the doer in the sense that I'm desiring. I'm the doer in that sense. I am desiring.
And what isn't Krishna? What isn't Krishna?
Nothing. And yet, Krishna is also saying in the 9th chapter, he's not those things. He's not there. What isn't Krishna is illusion. Whatever appears to be of value without relation to me has no existence. Know it to me, my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. As soon as we see that something is not Krishna, that is illusion. That is the definition of illusion. Prabhupada says in the story of Brahma stealing the boys and cows, Brahma's prayers, he says that Maya is in the mind. illusion is within us. Illusion is thinking that this game that I'm in is reality. It's not. It's a game. It's real. It's real. It's not that it's not the way the impersonal will say it's illusion. The impersonal will say it's illusion is that it doesn't exist. It does exist. It's just we're thinking it's something other than what it is. Instead of thinking this is electricity and it's ones and zeros and it's plastic and metal, I'm thinking it's actually life. So what is this world? It's just the modes of material nature. It's just goodness, passion, ignorance. Or from a scientific point of view, you could say it's protons, neutrons, and electrons. That's all it is. Protons, neutrons, and electrons. It's nothing else. It just isn't anything else but that. And Krishna is able to take those three things and combine them in so many different ways that you can have a CD player and a wooden floor and a fan and so Krishna has provided all those, the core materials, and he's provided the intelligence and the ability to turn them into CD players and fans, but they're just protons, neutrons, and electrons. And after the dissolution, bhutva, bhutva, pralayate, as he says in the 8th chapter, it all goes back to just that. If you could split all the atoms and just had a bunch of floating protons, neutrons, and electrons, just the modes of material nature, and in the ultimate pradam, you can't even distinguish between the modes, it's just a big merge. And then again, he combines them, have the most active, and they combine into all this different phantasmagoria. Or a movie is just, you know, three colors. Just three colors. And from the three colors, there's people, and there's animals, and there's scenery, and this is happening, and this is happening. I'm just watching the movie. What am I doing? I'm doing something. I wanted to see the movie. I heard about the movie. I became attracted to the movie. I bought the ticket for the movie. I walked into the movie theater. I sat in the movie theater. I'm watching the movie theater. But I'm not doing what I think I'm doing. I'm thinking, I'm identifying with the character, and I'm thinking, oh, I jumped off the cliff, and now I jumped onto the helicopter. Now, you know, that's not really happening. Something's happening. Lights are on the screen. That's happening. And there were actors at some distant point that got filmed. But it's what's happening is not what appears to be. So this is, it's all Krishna. It's all Krishna's energy. That's what he's showing in the universal form. I am everything. It's all me. It's all Krishna's body. It's all Krishna's universal body. But why don't we see that? Because we don't want to see it. That boy didn't want to see it was a game. He wanted to be absorbed in the game. Hey, it's just a game. It's just electricity. It's just ones and zeros. But that he wanted to be an illusion. He didn't want to come eat with the family and have his real life. So because we want to be an illusion, we become covered. And Krishna is so expert. You know, if you're looking at a movie or reading a book or dreaming or playing a game, you have some sense of it being unreal. Some sense of your actual identity, but with Krishna's Maya, Daivyesha Guna Maya Mama Maya Duratya, it's so strong. We also have some sense, every once in a while we think, something's really funny about this place. Something's just not right. You know, you like get everything, you get your money and you get your spouse and you get your house and you get your car and you get your dog and you say, is that it? Where's the kick? I don't get it. I got it. You know, I got my diploma, I got my car, I got my... It just, there's nothing... Where is it? What's going on? Something like, you ever have those dreams where you're drinking water? You ever dream like that? Or you're eating, or using the bathroom? And you just keep doing the same thing over and over and over and over and over again? I've had dreams where, especially if you sleep when you're doing like a near-jaw fast or something, you know, when you're dreaming that there's this... whole play of pecoritas. You ever do that? Sleep on a fast day. There's rice and pecoritas and samosas and big cups of ginger lemonade. And you're drinking and drinking and you're just thinking, I've drunk about 5 gallons of this ginger lemonade. What's happening here? How come I'm thirsty? You ever had a dream like that? You just think, what's going on here? And then sometimes you wake up and like, oh, I was just drinking in a dream. I wasn't actually putting any liquid in the body. So there's these little hints. The illusion isn't 100%, is my point. We have these little hints sometimes that something's funny here. I'm eating, I'm sleeping, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. And it's just not. It just doesn't work. I keep wanting more and more and more of it. I'm not satisfied. So that's kind of our clue that we're in a game. We're just in a game. And therefore, Krishna says, the end, Sarvadharma Prachaja. Don't worry about someone you owe money to in a game. Just come home. Just come home. Forget it. Turn off the computer. It's all right. You don't have to fix everything. You don't have to achieve all of your goals. And you just turn off the computer and come home. Come eat. Take care of it. Just turn off the computer. Turn off the movie. Close the book. Come eat. Let's play. And just is that all right? Anything else? We're so scared. If I turn off the computer, I won't have anything to do anymore. Okay, thank you very much. I'll thank you.